Sometimes the fun begins when the paved road ends. Chevy Silverado 2500 HD is made to work hard and play hard on the road or off. Go to ChevyDriveChicago.com for details and experience life in HD.
The dateline on this is July 12th of this year. It was a piece in the New York Times Sunday magazine, An Act of War, Inside America's Silicon Blockade Against China by Alex Palmer. It's one of those articles you read and you think, wow, are there some smart people on Earth? Every now and then I just stand up and say, go species. Even though I know I can't do it, it's amazing the stuff that pops out in this article. And the article isn't just there to sort of waylay you about the science, although it does, but then what is the U.S. policy about the science that makes these chips? Because whoever controls the chips, it seems, controls the world. The first half sentence in the story: last October, the United States Bureau of Industry and Security issued a document. And then the author talks about this document and how it might actually keep China from advancing as quickly as they want to. So we'll get to that in a minute. Palmer writes, chips are the lifeblood of the modern economy, the brains of every electronic device and system, from iPhones to toasters, data centers to credit cards. A new car might have more than 1,000 chips, each one managing a different facet of a vehicle's operation. And of course, we all know about OpenAI. ChatGPT, for example, was reportedly trained on 10,000 of the most advanced chips currently available. And he does a good job of telling you what these things are. He said tiny pieces of silicon carved with an array of circuits. The circuits flip on and off based on the activity of switches called transistors. When a circuit is on, it produces a 1. When it's off, a 0. The first chips invented in the late 1950s held only a handful of transistors. Today, the primary semiconductor in a brand new smartphone has between 10 and 20 billion transistors, each about the size of a virus. He talks one more note here before we go to our guest about the places where they make these chips. I mean, you know, we say we got behind during the pandemic. Well, let's just get some plants up running and crank these things out like they're yo-yos. They aren't. The places they make them are called fabs. Only a small handful of companies can compete at the cutting edge, where breakthroughs cost billions of dollars and decades of research. The best known example is the Extreme Ultraviolet Lithography Machine. In December of 2010, at a research facility in South Korea, an updated prototype, the TwinScan NXE3100, had its first successful test run. The newest version of that machine can craft structures as small as 10 nanometers. A human red blood cell, by comparison, is about 7,000 nanometers across. It uses lasers to create plasma 40 times hotter than the surface of the sun. He mentioned that the laser comes from a company, and the laser itself has 457,000 pieces, and that's just one of the components in the factory, the machines that actually make the chips. Now you know why they're so expensive and valued and difficult to produce. At least I think so. Alex Palmer is a contributing writer at New York Times Magazine. Alex, you're on WGN. Thanks for joining us, and thanks for writing that piece.
Thank you so much for having me, John. It's a pleasure.
Dang. So have you been studying this area for a while?
I went into it with a good amount of humility. I think sometimes the job of a writer is to translate what the extremely smart people are working on and saying so that a lay audience like myself can understand it. So I still, I do not claim to understand the full science. And one of the most amazing things about reporting this piece was talking to engineers who have invented some of the most cutting edge technology. And even they will say, look, I could talk you through it, but I don't actually understand how this machine works. It's a kind of collective wisdom that's been built up over decades, which is what makes it so hard to replicate and what makes it so amazing.
We're talking about the chip now, the actual silicon chip?
Yeah, so this was this quote about not being able to understand how the machine works. This was from a Dutch engineer who has some of the patents on that machine you mentioned, the EUV, the extreme ultraviolet lithography machine. You know, he helped invent it, and he still, you know, can't really tell you exactly how all these pieces work. It's a piece of magic, which makes it so incredible.
Yeah. And the thrust of the article, though, is that if we want to keep China or Russia or somebody else from getting too far ahead of us in terms of automobiles, cell phones, or weapons, it's all about the chips. We need to control the chips. That's the battlefield, if you will, right?
Yes, exactly. And the U.S. was a bit slow to recognize this. I think, you know, China had a policy from 2014 forward called Made in China 2025. And they've talked for, you know, since then and even earlier about the need to have control over the supply chain, especially for chips, because it is, you know, it's been compared to the oil of the new economy, that this is the ingredient that everything else needs to run.
And if I may, just to make sure I understand the point of the article, since you've described how difficult and detailed and expensive just the components are that make the chips, if we could get one country or one company to make it more difficult for China to get the technology, then we would be able to thwart their expansion in some of these areas. So you've got this global supply chain of companies and geniuses and businesses and economies that need to make these things. And if we get sort of cooperation saying, hey, don't give that stuff to China, we don't know what they're going to do with it, that's how you sort of fight the fight, right?
That's exactly right. And the U.S., for lots of reasons, has really unique leverage over this global supply chain. And it's because, you know, semiconductors were basically invented and first manufactured in the U.S. in the late 1950s. This is how Silicon Valley got its start. You know, semiconductors are on silicon chips. That's where the name comes from. And as a result of that original invention, the entire industry, you know, whether you're in the Netherlands, Japan, South Korea, any of these other hubs of the global supply chain, it relies to some extent on American knowledge, American IP, American technology. So all of those companies in other countries that are doing cutting edge work, to some extent, it's built off American know-how and American ingenuity. So that's given the U.S. and now the Biden administration this really unique leverage to be able to say, okay, there's this sprawling global supply chain, but it has all these choke points because there's only a few companies that don't know how to do this, and they happen to be reliant on the U.S. We can say, look, you can't export this specific piece of equipment, this specific piece of equipment. And that gives us a ton of leverage over what China can and cannot access.
Talk about how important Taiwan is in all of this.
Yeah, Taiwan plays a really unique role. They, from the 1990s onward, really tried self-consciously to make themselves into the premier manufacturer of silicon chips, of semiconductors. So, you know, all these stages that go around the world. In the U.S., for instance, we're really good at designing the chips. You know, it's complicated to put 20 billion transistors on something that's the size of your fingernail. So we are really great at that software. We're really great at some of the tools that go into the fab. The Dutch are good at other things. The Japanese have some strengths. South Koreans have other strengths. But it's Taiwan that has really said, we are going to be the ones who actually print these chips. You know, this is where it comes off the manufacturing line. This is where you can hold it in your hand. And so there's, you know, a handful of companies, but it's really one, TSMC, Taiwan Semiconductor Manufacturing Corporation, that has made itself into the best in the world. You know, by some estimates, it's something like a third of all new computing power in the world each year is created in Taiwan. And for the most advanced chips, the ones that are really at the cutting edge, that are powering things like, you know, open AI, biotechnology, green energy, Taiwan can make something like 90% of those. So they really have this chokehold, which gives them a great strength. You know, it's been called their silicon shield because were China to invade Taiwan, well, you know, the hiccups we saw during the pandemic of being able to access chips, if Taiwan goes offline, you know, those are going to look like nothing because the global economy is just going to suffer this catastrophic crash. So that gives Taiwan its own kind of leverage, right, because they have this shield. But it also puts them in this very precarious position because, of course, the U.S. and the West more broadly are not really comfortable with most of the chips that we depend on for, you know, fighter jets and missiles and everything in our daily lives as well, being produced, you know, 100 miles off China's shore on an island that China claims for itself. So the U.S. now is part of this, you know, part of this, you know, industrial manufacturing plan, part of the CHIPS Act. the Biden administration is encouraging more manufacturing to come here. So you see TSMC building a fab in Arizona.
Yeah.
But of course, Taiwan knows the delicacy of this. They are going to help the U.S., but they can't actually give up the crown jewels because that is what they need to protect themselves.
I think that sometimes we think about that as a convenience, not a necessity. Like, it'll build the economy, and I didn't want to wait that long for my Jeep Wrangler, so let's make some chips. And I don't think the Biden administration or any of us have communicated how important this is relative to Taiwan. I don't want to get into geopolitics too much here, but I mean, that really is the linchpin of this. Let me take a quick break and talk to me a little bit more about U.S. manufacturing of these things, too. And if there's any cool facts you want to lay on us about the technology, I'm all ears. An act of war inside America's silicon blockade against China is a story written by Alex Palmer in the New York Times Magazine. The date is July 12th. By the way, why are we calling it an act of war, though, Alex? What's that all about?
Yeah, that's a good question. So that's a quote from a semiconductor analyst, and he was saying, you know, it's sort of a commentary on how much U.S.-China relations have changed just in the last 5 or 6 years. He was saying, if you had told me about these semiconductor controls 5 years ago, I would have said that's an act of war, that we would have to be at war because it is such a serious step. But of course, in those 5 years, you know, since today, it's passed with some notice, obviously, in China watching communities and tech communities, but it wasn't a major headline. And that's a reflection of how U.S.-China relations have really hit a nadir, that this is now seen as sort of, yeah, this is a natural next step to what has become kind of a technological Cold War.
Your article is about that technology, which is amazing, and then the politics of how we can try and control the pipeline to keep China from getting these silicon chips, and then maybe they won't be able to develop smarter drones or missiles. But is this also going to affect my iPhone and my smartwatch and my toaster, or is the technology in those things so rudimentary by today's standards that I won't notice this war?
Yeah, that's a good question. So there's no precise figure, but the best estimates I got from folks in the industry was that the October 7th regulations are going to affect only about the top 1-2% of all sales of chips, that it really is the, you know, the bleeding edge chips that are being used in the most advanced things. So, yeah, your iPhone, your toaster, your oven, your car, those are all going to be just fine. There is a concern, perhaps down the line, you know, restrictions have a way of only expanding. It's hard to walk these back. So perhaps the line will keep moving farther and farther. And there is also a concern that having been cut off from the sort of peak of technology, China's play might be to try to monopolize the lower end. So then they could use that in some future conflict, right? Because it's really helpful to have chips that go into weapons and drones. But if something were to go south and all of a sudden no one in the U.S. could get toasters or cars or new phones, that would be its own kind of weapon. So there is concern that perhaps those could become casualties too. But for right now, it's really just things that, you know, folks at the cutting edge of research, at tech firms have to worry about, not sort of normal folks like us.
Should we be subsidizing then chip production in the USA? How are we doing on that front?
Yeah, so the CHIPS Act from the Biden administration was a big play to bring more manufacturing to the U.S., specifically with chips, but also with other types of advanced manufacturing that have left the U.S. over the last several decades. So we are subsidizing, or the U.S. government is subsidizing, the construction of fabs, the manufacturing facilities for chips. There is a question of whether that will be enough. You know, these fabs require subsidies to sort of get up and running, but then will the economics continue to make sense to operate in the U.S.? Will we have, you know, more regulations, higher labor costs, more environmental protections? That remains to be seen. But, of course, the first step is just to get these fabs built and open, and that is what the Biden administration is focused on right now.
I think we have an inferiority complex in this country, too. I wonder how deserved that is. That is, China's so much smarter and industrious, and India is, and they can throw larger populations than we can at it, and they're not democratic, so they don't give a crap. They'll just do whatever they want to do. How smart or competitive is the United States in this area?
Yeah, I agree that we have sort of had this, you know, very back and forth approach to China, that lately it's felt like China's 100 feet tall, and you know, the U.S. What can we do against something like that? But I would just say, you know, look at the history that semiconductors were invented here. U.S. was and remains a democracy when that happened. We continue to attract the best talent from all over the world. That's our really secret advantage, is that even the smartest folks in China want to come here to do their PhDs and then generally want to stay. You know, we don't have a population size like China does, but we have been able to punch above our weight because we allow for innovation. We have the best research, and we've really made an effort to keep on the cutting edge. So, yes, you know, China is catching up. Obviously, the October 7th controls are partly to pause and stop that progress China has been making. But the U.S. remains the world leader in most of the most important areas of research. And, you know, as long as we keep on that track, this is sort of a, you can think of this as like a foot race, right? The October 7th controls were meant to slow down China, to trip them up. The U.S. also needs to run faster. And things like the CHIPS Act, you know, new investments in science and technology, that's meant to do that. And so far it seems to be working. It's a long game. You know, this is going to, we might not know if the October 7th restrictions worked until 50 years from now. But it seems like progress is being made.
Alex Palmer writing in the New York Times Magazine, an act of war inside America's Silicon blockade against China. Alex, it's a pleasure to meet you. Keep doing what you're doing. I'd love to talk to you the next time you publish something there.
Thank you very much. I would love to come back on.
Alex Palmer at the New York Times.